Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Gwyn Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Signal-Reed, and our guest this week, Don Mackay, who publishes as W.D. Mackay. Each week we visit with an author, an editor, or a publisher who has local connections. We hope to find out a little bit about their lives, what prompts them to write, and give them an opportunity to read some of their work for us. And today we're very pleased to welcome Don Mackay. Welcome, Don.
Thank you.
William Donald Mackay was born and raised in Bracebridge, Ontario. Don moved to Belleville in the summer of 1989. There he worked at retouching color film negatives by hand, then setting up his own wedding photography business, which he ran for a number of years. Don has had several cover photos and articles published in nationally distributed magazines. Having always been a writer, he recently decided he should start to publish. His creative focus now is on writing science fiction novels, and he has completed a trilogy titled The Lanark Chronicles, which were released in 2013-2014. He's now working on a fourth novel at his home in Foxborough. So, Don, how did you get into science fiction? Has it always been a favorite genre of yours?
I think it has. Looking back, one of my favorite comics as a kid was Magnus the Robot Fighter. I was 8 years old at the time, and I was absolutely blown away by it. Imagine robots fighting, that type of thing, long before space travel had really gotten anywhere. So that's where it all started. And interestingly enough, about 3 years ago, I was at a yard sale, and what do I find? The very comic that I read all those years ago on sale for 50 cents.
Oh, what a treasure.
It was fabulous.
Did you plan to write the trilogy from the beginning and then write one outline for all three books, or how did you go about it?
I had no intention of writing a trilogy. It started four years ago, I was sitting outside in the summer on my patio, having a cold one. Something had been nagging at me for a few days. So I got an idea, a vague idea about the story, and all of a sudden this character shows up in my mind. It's a young girl, and she says, "You should write about me." I asked her, "What should I write?" And she said, "You'll see." So it was a couple days later, I just started writing, and it just took off from there. The characters controlled the entire story.
Oh, isn't that a wonderful thing to happen?
It was incredible. It felt like I was just trying to keep up with them, trying to get it down on paper or in my laptop. I know you tell people that, they think you're out of your mind. How can the characters be running the story? It's all coming out of your head. Well, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but that's what happened with me. It was just amazing.
And it was a science fiction novel from the start?
Right from the very beginning.
Yeah.
So I got about three quarters of the way through the book, and another character popped into my head. And I thought, oh, there it goes. So that stopped me cold for about 2 weeks. And then I realized at that point, this is going to go way beyond a single book. And that's when it turned into a trilogy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Tell us a little about the Lanark Chronicles.
It's the story of a family and how they're going to have to deal with an alien who's coming to Earth to correct a catastrophic mistake that happened. Basically, the Earth was never intended to be any more than bare rock drifting through space. The story centers around family. There's four main characters. There's Bobby Lynn Allen, who's 7 years old, her mother, Janelle, her aunt, Angelina, mm-hmm. and David Mace, who is an astrobiologist, which is someone who likes to search for intelligent life in outer space.
Oh, quite a cast.
Quite a cast, yeah.
Yeah.
But I find writing the story, I'm better at writing from inside the story rather than outside. I don't like looking at the character and say, okay, this is what they're going to say and do. I try to become that character.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Bobby was 7 years old, so I'm thinking, okay, in the morning, Bobby comes running downstairs, skids across the kitchen floor on her socks, drops to her knees and hugs her cat and says, "Hi, Mom." Perfectly typical 7-year-old behavior.
Right.
You know. Janelle is a single mother, fiercely protective of her daughter. Angelina is Janelle's older sister, who is very protective of her younger sister. And then they meet David Mace, who's the astrobiologist, and he's the scientist, and he's going to have everything he ever knew about space and the universe come out to be completely wrong.
Oh. So it's set on Earth then?
It's on Earth.
It's
yeah.
on Earth.
Yes.
Okay. Is it in the future or?
About 50 years from now.
Okay, cool. Perhaps you could read to us a little bit from the Chronicles.
Sure. This is a little ways into chapter one. God, the insanity came close last time. David Mace exhaled sharply. A cold shiver crossed the back of his neck as he momentarily closed his eyes, vague, swirling images pounding at his brain as he recalled the nightmare from the night before. The headaches had been minor at first, his sleep only occasionally disturbed by restlessness. But as the weeks and months progressed, the frequency of the headaches increased. They might have been manageable if the nightmares hadn't started, blasting into his subconsciousness to terrify him in the middle of the night. The worst ones made him feel as if he were only moments from the edge of insanity. The images would slam into him and rush through his mind like a torrent, or race about until they suddenly shattered in a spray of sparkles falling harmlessly away, and he would wake to hours of blood-pounding throbbing in his head. He desperately tried to make sense of the haunting images that lingered after another night of the sweats. Sometimes, in a quiet part of the day, he would try to focus on them, the shadowy shapes, like entities floating up into his consciousness. The flashing reds, the brilliant blasts of white light, the metallic shimmers, none of it made sense. So now here he was in the middle of nowhere in this godforsaken cabin, collecting solace or some such crap. He hadn't really paid attention to what his shrink had told him, but he would have gone along with anything just to get out of his office and not have to serve any time. This wasn't quite what he'd pictured when he'd been presented with the idea of a quiet retreat. A log cabin in the mountains for David Mace, the top scientific investigator, the best astrobiologist in the world. Heaven help me if my friends at Unilife Research Institute could see me now. Nothing but rock and pine trees as far as the eye can see. Not even a damn road for crying out loud, let alone a phone or hydro or a cold beer or anything else that might be considered convenient or comfortable for a 42-year-old. And worst of all, he couldn't even contact Allison. He stood outside the cabin, nestled deep amongst the tall pines and granite outcroppings of the foothills, taking in the gathering gloom and the quiet of the early evening with a disgruntled scowl. The stillness rang in his ears. He was fed up with feeling fed up. A peculiar sound softened his scowl. It was alien to the stillness, to the night. It sounded like paper being shredded far, far away. It floated in on the breeze behind him. David dropped the split firewood he'd been carrying onto the pile by the worn wooden steps of the porch and turned toward the noise. The approaching noise, and his mouth dropped open. A giant white-hot fireball filled the sky, blazed across the night, seemingly melting the very molecules of the air caught in its path. It appeared to be heading directly toward him out of the dark blue velvet above the cabin. A roar filled the air around him, and David pressed his hands hard against his ears, but it made almost no difference. He continued staring in disbelief, staggering under the enormity of the sight before him as the fireball descended until it was almost on top of him, blotting out everything with its blinding light. I'm going to die. He stumbled forward, diving into a shallow, U-shaped granite hollow 20 feet from the cabin. A moment later, the cabin exploded into flames and instantly became a raging inferno. David screamed as the dry timbers shattered from the heat, throwing shards of flaming wood in all directions. He could feel the skin on his back starting to scorch, as if his clothes were on fire. He pushed his face against the jagged granite, scraping his nose and cheeks. In seconds, the blaze had consumed the tall pines in the yard. David screamed and screamed, as much from sheer terror as from the scorching heat. The crackling roar of it increased to an ear-splitting level. And then, in a heartbeat, it was over, and all was darkness as the heat subsided. He raised himself up on his elbows just in time to be slammed back down by the thunderous impact of the meteor finally hitting the earth down the slope from the cabin. The sound of the blast ricocheted around the mountains, unable to escape, before finally dissipating. David lay very still, and he slowly eased himself back onto his elbows. All the grass and scrub brush within 100 yards had been burned off, the ground charred. What was left of the trees stood smoldering, like grotesque giant black toothpicks. The rest had been flattened on its way to incineration. The cabin was demolished. Parts of it continued to burn. Stunned and still shaking, David ran his fingers through his wavy brown hair and came away with a handful of powdery white ash. Suddenly he became aware of tremendous pain. He jumped up, dazed and coughing violently in the superheated, smoke-filled air swirling all around him. Ripping at his soot-blackened shirt, he tried to run to the creek on the far side of the cabin, staggering like a drunkard and half falling with every step. At his edge, he slipped and fell hard onto the slick rocks before tumbling sideways into the rushing water. The icy cold mountain stream was like a miracle salve, easing the agony of a scorched back. He floated there, one arm hooked around a rock, and tried to think. He couldn't get past the image of the fireball rushing at him. The crater must be immense. When he at last managed to slow his breathing and clear his head enough for a coherent thought, he slowly stood in the waist-deep water, cringing as the warm air contacted the seared skin on his back. Pulling his dripping shirt up out of the water, he gently eased himself into it. The chilled fabric helped a lot. He prodded gingerly at his ribs and decided the fall hadn't broken anything.
Well, poor David. I hope he makes his way out of that fire and what have you.
Fire and brimstone.
Fire and brimstone, sure. We've been talking with Don Mackay, who publishes as W.D. Mackay, who's here talking to us today about his science fiction trilogy, The Lanark Chronicles. And we'll talk again with Don in just a few minutes.